For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It might be interesting and important for you to know.
The Paul Kurtman Show.
People that have some common sense and they're willing to say some things out loud that everybody else is just thinking.
When the left has the government, it's chaos and it's dangerous.
Paul Kurtman.
It's not really about the climate, it's about control.
This is The Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
And welcome to The Paul Kurtman Show today here on News Talk STL. In the studio this afternoon with Ken Williams. Ken, good to be with you again for another show.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. It's great to be here.
You know, last week we talked a lot of history.
Yeah.
And I had some people that were saying, hey, that was good stuff.
Vic Porcelli wants to get you on the show and talk about some of that.
Well, I would love to do it because I am absolutely fascinated with history. I'm a history nut. Even it wasn't necessarily career-minded, but I got a master's degree in ancient and classical history.
Oh, wow.
Because I just wanted to study a little bit about more about history. They say that those who don't understand their history or don't know their history are doomed to repeat it.
Exactly.
And last week, that's what we were doing when we spent the segment talking a little bit about ancient Rome and the things that led to their failure and all the similarities, all the things that are rising to the surface of American culture and society that are just like, you know, overlapping, like clearly overlay right on top of ancient Roman history.
Right.
And what's scary is we're getting there way faster than the Romans. The Romans got there, it still took them about 500 or 600 years.
Right.
we're like 200 plus years into this American experiment and we're already there.
I've thought about what is the underlying original cause of that. At least from my perspective in America, it seems to me that we almost get complacent, we get lazy, we get too comfortable.
We do.
And then we have to seek out things to complain about.
Yeah. Yeah. The way I've expressed this before is we are so blinded by the fruit of our freedom, by the blessings of our freedom, that, you know, you sometimes hear people refer to, oh, that's a first world problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very real thing. Like people in America don't understand what problems and tribulation and trials really are. Like we think we do because we see something that just rubs against our sense of justice, you know, here in America as we sit down in our air-conditioned living room watching our flat-screen television. And during the commercial break, we might get up to go get a whole bowl full of snacks loaded with sugar or fruit. And then we come back and we talk about how bad some people in America have it. But we don't have it bad. Like, you take any problem that Americans are facing today, the majority of the world would love to have those problems if that's the only problems they had.
Yeah, and I use that term, that phrase, on my daughters all the time. Well, I used to use it, and I would explain it. And I don't have to explain it anymore, because if they complain about something, oh, yeah, that's a real first world problem. They look at me, and they kind of roll their eyes, and they walk away. But I believe they get the message.
I hope they do. But the thing is I think that a lot of people don't really... You can get the message, but to really understand the message and to develop a sense of empathy and awareness of where that message comes from, I think it's important for people to travel or to talk with people who have had these things. We had a couple in our church just last weekend, and I won't say their names, but they're not. They aren't originally from the U.S. They were born and grew up in Soviet Russia, and they've told us stories. They're dedicated Christians. And they have both been beat within an inch of their life on more than one occasion. One of them was sent to a work camp in Siberia, all because they got caught having a Bible study with some of their friends.
How could they? How dare they?
How dare they have a Bible study?
Yeah.
See, you would think hearing this sounds like something out of some type of Orwellian,
like dystopian movie. Yeah,
yeah, like something out of Hollywood. But the thing is there's people around the world today who have survived. I mean, you wouldn't think, according to the left, that if you're white, you have white privilege. Well, there's a lot of white people out there who have been literally enslaved in work camps,
yeah,
and imprisoned just because they got caught doing things that we take for granted. Like here, we complain about Christians and people of faith, and we say, oh, you guys, you know, this is just old, out of date. But there are some people, they're so dedicated to their faith, even in the face of death. And so we had this couple that came to our church, and they were both like, he was beat up and sent to a work camp. He listened to his wife getting tortured until she almost died.
Oh.
And so like, these are things that real people have actually gone through. So they are first world problems for us, but you really begin to understand, like, this isn't just, it's more than a saying.
Yeah.
And that's what I think needs to be instilled in young people. It's more than a saying. Like, you don't understand how incredibly blessed you are to be living in this country with all of our problems, with all of our failures, with all of the marks that we have on us. It is still the best and safest place for any ethnic group, any religion, anybody to want to be, which is why they come here in droves, right? Because people want to come here so that way they don't have to face that type of persecution and suffering because of their beliefs or because of their lifestyle or because of, you know, you name it.
Paul, don't you believe it's also like a part of, it's a part of perspective.
It's a way to put that sense of entitlement in check.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
This is why you see such successful programs. They've made TV shows about this where they'll send kids that are kind of wayward children, rebellious of their parents, they're getting involved in drugs and crime, so they send them to a boot camp, or else they'll send them into prison for a few days.
I think those are great.
I think they're phenomenal programs for these kids to go into, but once they're there, that's when they start realizing, oh man, I wish I was back on the outside. I had it so good, and I squandered it, and now I'm here.
Yeah.
So I think that that kind of deprivation, and what you just said, it's better to deprive yourself of some of these things voluntarily rather than ultimately get to a position where it's forced on you.
Right.
And that's what we see coming from the far left. That's what we see coming from this authoritarian mindset, this idea, this culture of compliance, not a culture of freedom, but a culture of compliance. And pretty soon, people that don't say something, people that don't fight for their freedom or stand up for their liberty, they wind up in a place where this deprivation is forced on them, all because they just took too many things for granted and they had this sense of entitlement.
And let's look at this at a bigger scale, a scale of a nation. Right now, we're arguing left versus right about everything. I mean, everything, culturally, celebrities, sports. I mean, it's almost embedded in everything we do now. Take that away by having the Chinese take over our country. And you're going to see a lot of people who are going to coalesce and become a one nation again, or at least try to. It'll be automatic. If you have, say, and this is a crazy idea, but say somehow the Chinese do take over somehow. Well, you've got a nation of people that go, wait a minute, you mean my freedoms are gone? You mean all of my everyday things that I take for granted are completely gone? Well, I want to become a nation again, darn it. I want to become one with the, I want to be a patriot of the United States again.
See, that, what you're expressing there, like, this is what it would take to unite the country. We saw this after 9/11.
Yeah.
Right? This was in the wake. 9/11 happened in the wake of this huge fight between George Bush and Al Gore.
Right.
Who really won the election? Well, George Bush only won he didn't win the popular vote, but he won the Electoral College. And that really could have been, discussed and argued in courts and political science classrooms across the country, and just, we might not have seen an end to it, and it really would have been used to divide the country even further. But then, bam, 9/11 happens, and immediately everybody's an American. It's not about the color of your skin. It's not about what you believe. It's not about your lifestyle. You're an American because we felt that threat. For the people that were living on 9/11, the people that watched the planes hit the towers or watched those towers fall, watched the devastation, the people that stood in line to give blood for weeks, all the people that literally lined up. I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime. I saw pictures of it in a history book after December 7th, attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Right. People were lined up. Young men were lining up outside of recruiting centers.
Right.
You saw that happen after 9/11. People in all shades of skin color were lined up outside of recruiting stations. And how far we've come from that since. Ronald Reagan said that one of the things that could possibly unite the whole world is an extraterrestrial threat.
Right.
So he was speaking to the same idea that in the face of a threat, people tend to come together. But the flip side of that, though, is this. When the threat actually lands on your doorstep and it's knocking on your door or it's bursting your way into the door, once it gets in and gets a foothold, what history also tells us is that the people that would have otherwise united, if they didn't have any semblance of unity at first, quickly that threat begins to further divide. You see this happening in just after the Nazis invaded France. There was a French underground resistance that continued to fight, but there was a lot of French men and women
who coalesced and joined.
And they joined the Nazis, and Jews. George Soros is famous for this, right? This guy that funds all these leftist programs trying to overturn the whole U.S., right?
Oh, Kim Gardner, D.A. Bragg.
Yeah. All of that.
Yeah.
He, by his own admission, was helping round up as a young man other Jews. And so am I thinking of George Soros? Is he the one?
Yeah.
Okay. That I was actually like working with the Nazi party once they came in.
That's what I've read.
So have I. And but you see that this happens when the threat is actually inside.
Yeah.
Well, you have to wonder like how much of the threat has actually manifest itself in the country. I mean, we just let a spy.
So you're saying, okay, so sorry to interrupt, but you're saying that, say, the Biden administration, for example, there are a lot of people within the organization right now that have already coalesced. They've already made moves to make this type of government, this globalist, Democrat, socialist, maybe even communist type of government happen.
What I'm saying is we've seen it before where deep inside of a presidential administration, there can be spies. Alger Hiss is one that I'm thinking of in the wake of World War II, made it all the way inside the Oval Office. He was tried. So like you see that governments are trying to infiltrate, but you can also infiltrate. You don't even necessarily have to infiltrate as deeply as maybe Alger Hiss or other operatives have done in the past. What you can also do is you can just divide the leadership itself, or you can give them a false sense of mission, or you can give them a counterfeit mission.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is you get people inside the White House and they take an oath to the Constitution. But once they get in there, they start thinking, well, we're going to really do this. I'll give you a perfect example. In 2022, Biden signed it wasn't even legislation. He basically signed what amounts to a presidential signing statement, essentially, where he's telling investment advisors, hey, investment advisors have a fiduciary responsibility to make decisions that are in the best interest of their clients because they want their money to go to work so they have more money available for them in retirement. So you want that money to work for you. So investment advisors are supposed to have a fiduciary responsibility to make decisions with people's money that is in the best interest of those people.
Their primary job.
That's right.
Right.
Joe Biden said, well, it's also in the best interest of the people to make sure that the sea levels aren't rising, because what good is retirement if your retirement home's underwater?
See, that's such a bad argument.
So instead of saying that your money has to work for you for retirement, it also has to work for the planet, so you have the planet in retirement. So now the progressives have essentially been able to hijack all this trillions of dollars that's in retirement savings or brokerage accounts.
Yeah, BlackRock, Vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they begin to steer that money towards these companies that have this ESG certification. So what I'm saying is like if you're a government that wants to see America fall, you will pervert the mission for the people who are taking an oath of allegiance to our Constitution, which was designed to protect our freedom. And instead, like Joe Biden did with investment advisors and their fiduciary duty, well, yeah, we have to make sure that we're executing justice, but justice also means this. And now we find ourselves in a situation where high school students can't tell the difference now between regular justice and social justice.
Right.
You know?
And that's scary.
It is scary. And we have multiple officials at the federal level who can't even define what a woman is. See, because they've lost their sense, their true sense of mission. There's no integrity behind what it is they're trying to accomplish in government.
Well, they're afraid to be canceled as well. You see those Senate and Congress hearings where they're being interviewed and they're saying, well, can you just explain what a woman is? And they get all wordy and they have to evade because they're afraid that if they say the wrong word, insert the wrong word in the wrong part of the sentence, that they're going to be completely canceled.
So when we come back, and I'm going to play a clip for you. I want everybody to hear this clip that is a perfect example of exactly what it is we're talking about, where somebody in office has a perverted sense of mission. And then I hope to answer your question about what it is that brings us to this point in the third segment. And we're going to go back in time and talk a little bit more history, to talk a little bit about that. Right when we come back here, Paul Kirtman Show, 101.9, 94.1, News Talk STL.
follow Paul on social media at Paul Kurtman. This is the Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL. Like that. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. You're listening to the Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
We've got a crisis when it comes to roadway fatalities in America. We lose about 40,000 people every year. It's a level that's comparable to gun violence. And we see a lot of racial disparities. Black and brown Americans, tribal citizens, and rural residents much more likely to lose their lives, whether it's in a car or as a pedestrian being hit by a car. There are a lot of reasons related to discrimination, related to even the ways that roads are designed and built. Who has access to a safe street design that's got crosswalks and good lighting? Who doesn't have that access? That can drive disparities, and we have a responsibility to act on that.
Welcome back to the Paul Kurtman Show. That was Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, clearly making the point that I was making just in the last segment, not in terms of there being racial disparities on roadways in America, not the idea that our road and highway infrastructure is inherently racist, but the fact that here he is the Secretary of Transportation, and instead of actually responding to the problems that we're facing in our transportation infrastructure, whether it's the recent catastrophic events that we've seen in Palestine, Ohio, and all the roadway, and there have been numerous train wrecks and derails still spilling chemicals ever since that. It's happened several times.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's Pete Buttigieg not being around and instead, in fact, being on personal time or being on parental leave, or what do you call it when the husband, paternal leave?
Paternal.
Right? Paternal leave?
Yeah.
So this guy can't even be found whenever we need him. But when he's asked to address all the problems that we have in infrastructure, he immediately pivots and turns it into a racial issue.
Yes, every time.
And my question for Pete Buttigieg is, well, you're the Secretary of Transportation now. And so much in transportation can be done really through the executive branch. The president can sign things. We can do things. Congress still has to vote on some stuff for sure, but he has an awful lot of authority and power. So my question to Pete Buttigieg is it not racist anymore because you're there? Can you tell us and identify and enumerate the different points in our transportation infrastructure that are actually racist? And can you tell us why they're racist? But instead, what he does is he says that it's paramount to gun violence. So he's making the connection between deaths on our highways and gun violence. But he won't go all the way by saying we need to ban roads and cars. He'll say we need to ban guns, but no, we don't need to ban roads and cars. But he's just trying to connect. He's trying to create dots that you cannot even connect because they don't even exist, to connect gun violence to road deaths. And both of these, he's saying, is certainly in the, as far as road deaths are concerned, on our highways and on our bridges and on our rural county roads and tribal roads, he says, it all has a racial connotation. It's inherently racist that people of color or ethnic minorities might be dying. This is somebody who has a mandate to be the charge over all of our transportation infrastructure, not just its efficiency, but it's also its safety and security. And he's failing to do both of those because he has hijacked the mission. And he's trying to say this is all about race because this is what the left does in America in 2023.
Yeah. Yeah.
They divide on racial grounds because they can't divide on the grounds of economic mobility like the way they used to, because you can still be born into squalor and rise to become a billionaire in America. You can still do that. So they can't divide us as well as they have been able to divide people in like Eastern Bloc countries. But this is what the left does. It's divide, find ways to divide people. And that's what Pete Buttigieg is doing.
And I mentioned this earlier this week with Vic. Donald Trump, he thrives with loyalty and unity. He loves people of all colors in America. He doesn't care about color is not an issue for him. That was a creation by the media and by the left. It has nothing to do with his goals. He loves loyalty, of course, but he also loves unity. Now, the opposite of that is the Democrat Party who loves division. They are only powerful when they create division. And racism and systemic racism and promoting that, that's what causes division. So somehow, and they're masters at this, the Democrat socialist radicals are masters at manipulating words. And they control these words by saying that fatalities are racial in some fashion. How can...
For both drivers and pedestrians.
Yes.
On crosswalks.
For both.
If you're crossing a road and you're black or Hispanic or Asian...
You're probably going to get hit
just
first.
Because of the color of your skin.
Right.
That's the motivating factor here. Because of the color of your skin, you're more likely to get hit and killed.
So I... Have you ever heard Buttigieg's solution to this?
I don't think he has a solution. I think this is what the left does. The left operates according to a method of operation where they need to divide. And this is not new. We can see this. Let's talk a little bit about history again, going all the way back to Karl Marx. You see the need to divide people. And this is not just Paul Kurtman just making stuff up. You might remember, Ken, when Black Lives Matter first institutionalized, right? They became an actual corporate entity, and they had a website. And on their website, they had their list of things they believe and their objectives and their agenda. And it didn't last very long, but when they first went online, one of the things that they said they wanted to do, I probably still got the screenshot on my phone still because I took a couple screenshots and sent it to people who didn't believe me. I said, right here on their website, one of the things that they want to do is I'm trying to remember the word they used, but it was basically dismantle the nuclear family. They wanted to
get in. No, I remember reading that, yes.
Yeah. So this is what the left wants to do. From the top to the bottom, they want to divide people. And you want to talk about something incredibly nefarious. Dismantling the nuclear family. This is the same left that makes a big case about young children being separated from their parents down on the border.
Right.
But when given an opportunity to start an organization in a movement, they'll actually stick it in their agenda that they want to dismantle the nuclear family. Their goal is to separate parents from children. In fact, if you look at a lot of the entitlement benefits that they've passed into law, they incentivize broken homes. This is one of the reasons that I believe has contributed to a lack of economic mobility in the black community. That we have incentivized entitlement benefits and different types of welfare. Yeah. So if you're a single mother, you'll get paid more than if you're a married mother of two.
I posted a meme on Twitter once, recently actually. It was a breakdown of the benefits and the entitlements that a person might get. It was a lady on there who was an illegal immigrant, and you broke down exactly what she's eligible to receive, and actually did receive, and it totaled through everything that she received, $3,600 a month. That's a lot of money that we're paying for one person.
Ken, one of the very first phone calls I got when I was in the legislature, and what I just said just now about we see more of this in the black communities, because this goes all the way back to the civil rights era, in particular with Lyndon Baines Johnson. I'm trying to remember the name of his plan. It's just escaping me right now. Anyway, he had this big plan, you know, that his whole goal was to begin to pull in these different minority communities and just get them into the Democrat Party. And a lot of it had to do with entitlement reform. But it's not just even the black community. It's white people. It's just basically anybody who's more poor or more prone to say not having their parents together in the home. This is why it's so important for mothers and fathers to stay together. But the government has weaponized our entitlement program so it incentivizes parents to not be together in the home. So anyway, Pete Buttigieg, if you want to go all the way back to his statement that he just had a few minutes ago, this is somebody who is in charge of the whole transportation infrastructure of the U.S., but now it's become entirely racial. His whole sense of mission has been completely hijacked, not by the purpose of his position, but by the purpose of his underlying leftist agenda. And it's not new. It's been happening for millennia.
Lyndon Johnson's Economic Opportunity Act of 1964, was that it?
The Economic Opportunity Act, that's probably it. Yeah. So, and man, the thing is there's just so much history. Whenever the government starts passing out free money, the first question out of everybody's mouth should be, why? And for how long, and how do we get off of this? Right now, I had an opportunity to talk to State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman about a bill that she's working on, and this is true. Even our own entitlement benefits here in Missouri, you might be getting some benefits because you've been out of work. But once you start getting back to work, as soon as you hit a certain threshold of income, all your benefits stop.
Right.
And so that creates an incentive for people to not prosper, because if you're making $35,000 and if you make $35,001, then that extra $700 or $800 a month from the government goes away immediately. But right. when you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's incredibly important to have that money. And so we have these systems that are designed to really kind of keep people down at the lowest rung of the ladder and make sure that they get the message. You can reach higher on the ladder, but if you do, it becomes incredibly risky, because as soon as you reach higher on the ladder, maybe you grab that next rung, you immediately lose two places and you drop down a couple levels. Yeah. You have to begin to fight your way back up.
Well, that's the same way with when I was trying to go to college. I couldn't afford it. I was on work study and I did a couple of other things. And my dad, he was pretty far up in McDonnell Douglas, and he had made quite a bit of money, but we had 8 kids. So he was in that situation where I couldn't receive any funds for school because my dad made too much money. But in reality, I couldn't afford to go to school, so I had to go to work.
Yeah.
I mean, I did go to school, but I was on work study and a couple of grants and things, but I really didn't receive the money that I could have, you know, if my dad was on a different level.
You know, whenever the government starts talking about how they're going to be the savior of all these racial discrepancies and disparities, people ought to understand, and this is incredibly important to grasp, the government's solution only creates more groups that only create more reasons for one group to not like the other group.
Yeah.
When I was also in the legislature, this is probably maybe my third or fourth year, we were having a bill come before us that was dealing with the LGB plus community. And I had two constituents come in, two homosexual men. They were a couple. They came in. They were super nice. I invited them into my office. We sat down, offered them some water. We talked about this bill. They wanted me to vote in. They were constituents of mine. They wanted me to vote in favor of a bill that created a special class of citizen. So if you were gay, lesbian, bisexual, probably transgender now with what they're doing with legislation these days, well, then that created a special class. You had special protections under the law. And I was really nice to them, and they were really nice to me. And I explained to them that I will be voting no on this bill. I will be voting no on any bill that creates a special class of people.
Yeah.
I think that governments go a wrong direction that carries us down the wrong path very quickly when we start classifying people into different groups. And the whole point was not the whole point of the civil rights movement was to start pulling people out of all these separate groups and put them into one big group as American citizens, where we all enjoy the same rights and protections under the law.
Right.
Right. So.
And that's amazing that today they're actually doing, the left, I'm saying, is actually doing the opposite of what Martin Luther King Jr. intended, because they're having segregation by way of keeping themselves exclusive to like a club in college or one of the, and we've talked about that before, where you have a special club that where whites are not allowed.
Something really interesting happened this week. Are you familiar with any shootings that happened this week?
Yeah, there was one that was not publicized.
Tell me about the one that was publicized.
The one that was publicized, well, the only thing that I saw that was really publicized were the kids in Chicago.
Okay. Are you familiar with this shooting that happened in Kansas City?
Yeah, with the little guy?
Where the young man, 16 years old, was going to pick up his siblings. He went to the wrong door.
Correct.
Rang the doorbell, and the homeowner shot him. He survived.
Twice.
Shot him. He survived, fortunately. Hopefully, he continues to make a good recovery. And immediately, the media coverage on that is there's a racial component here. Now, that man that pulled the trigger and shot Ralph Yarl, that was the young man's name.
Right.
The man who shot him, his name was Andrew Lester, and he has two grandsons. One of them says that there was a racial component, and the other grandson says, no, there is no racial component. Sounds like one of his grandsons is a little bit more left-leaning and is quick to make these claims. I don't know. I haven't been able to verify anything, but one of the grandsons says, no, there's no racial component. He's an old man. He was scared because nobody ever comes to his door. Someone comes to his door. And so what we're being told in the media is this was all about race. There were two other shootings that also happened this week. In one of them, a 20-year-old girl and her boyfriend pull into the wrong driveway of a man in upstate New York. as they're trying to find a party, they're both on their way to a party, a friend is holding a party, they go too far down a road, they pull into a driveway just to turn around. And as they're turning around and leaving, the homeowner comes out with a shotgun, fires two shots into the car, and kills the 20-year-old girl. She's dead. They were just on their way to a party. They were even leaving. They never even got out of their car. They were just backing out. Nothing about that. Nothing about that, because that doesn't fit the agenda.
Right.
There's another case where a 6-year-old girl's basketball rolled into the neighbor's yard, a white girl. Her black neighbor came out, shot her, a 6-year-old girl, in the head, and then shot at the parents. Fortunately, everybody survived, but we don't hear about that either. But here's three cases of somebody just accidentally going to the wrong house. But what does the media want to play on is the racial component. And folks, it's not an accident. Don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. There is an agenda to try to divide people along racial grounds, and we shouldn't stand for it.
Paul, the media is in control right now. And I'm talking about the legacy corporate Pfizer media.
When we come back, we're going to get to answering your question about what it is that has brought us to this point. We're going to play a clip from Tulsi Gabbard, and she sums it up clearly, and we're going to give multiple examples from history that help reinforce her point. Make sure you stick around right here. Paul Kermit Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kurtman. You're listening to The Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. This is The Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
All right, and welcome back to the third and final segment of The Paul Kurtman Show. And we are finally getting into it. Talked a little bit about it in the first and segment. We've been talking kind of around it this whole time, Ken. In the first segment, you asked the question. You talked a little bit about what it is that brings us all the way to this point.
Yeah.
There is a one underlying foundational thing that happens in governments and has happened in government throughout history that is always, once they do this one thing, everything else begins to fall. Like all these other dominoes begin to fall until pretty soon the whole society has completely tumbled and crumbled. Tulsi Gabbard gets right to this. Let's go ahead and play this clip number 3 from Tulsi Gabbard.
Any political party that tries to erase God from every facet of our public life can't be trusted to protect those inalienable God-given rights enshrined in the Constitution and should not be in power. We see the rejection of this truth taking form in how they are trying to use identity politics to tear us apart. If you reject the fact that we are all God's children, then you see what we are seeing now, where they are trying to use the color of our skin to divide us, trying to see these superficial labels that are placed upon us for their own political gain. It's so hypocritical because they're betraying Dr. Martin Luther King's dream through their actions. Intentionally, not just talking about, but boasting. We saw the White House press secretary last week boasting about how they were hiring people based on their race, based on their gender, based on their orientation, rather than judging us based on our character and our qualifications.
There you have it. Here it is, a Democrat, former Democrat, right? She left the party. She's still certainly liberal on a number of issues.
Oh, yeah.
But Tulsi Gabbard hit the nail on the head. And I could have played the same clip from any number of conservatives or Republicans who have said the same thing over and over and over again. But I think it just kind of helps make the point when even somebody that had been entrenched inside the liberal movement for so long is able to recognize something, a truth that is self-evident. And that's even what she calls it out. She calls it a truth. She actually says, when governments reject this truth. Notice she didn't say when governments reject their truth. Notice she didn't say this truth is just different than the rest of ours. She says, when governments reject this truth. It is a truth, right? That she's talking about, that our rights don't come from each other. They come from God.
Right.
But if we really believe that God does not have any role inside of public discourse, if we try to push the idea of a higher power completely outside of the narrative of the experiment of America, then all we are left with is sitting at the mercy of whoever just happens to be in power.
Yeah.
And how do they manipulate the people in order to get into power? They create division among the people. And it's whichever base can get riled up the most and be the squeakiest wheel at the end of the day is going to win out, which is why our founding fathers were scared of democracy, right? Because I'm trying to remember which one of our founding fathers said it. They said democracy is, they said it's two wolves and one sheep voting on what to have for dinner. That was their idea of democracy.
Right.
And what we need is we need the rule of law to protect everybody. But you get away from the rule of law to protect God-given rights when you're able to quickly and decisively and very efficiently and strategically, almost like a bully, the way a bully would be nefarious and sinister in doing this, you're able to find a way to push God out of the discussion or the idea that we're all in the same basket of God's children. We're all in the same basket of his creation, and he is the higher power to all of us, so we all have a responsibility to be careful with each other.
But he can't be according to the left's narrative, because that they again they strive with division, and you cannot have religion and be a divided group of people. You can't be with religion. They know that there's unity there. There's also conservatives thrive with unity.
Mm-hmm.
The left thrives with division and fear. I want to say fear as well.
There is an inherent desire for Americans, not just Americans, for people.
People.
There's an inherent desire for people to want to be free.
Right.
I think that the left has done a very good job manipulating people's thoughts and making them think that freedom is free stuff with all these strings attached. That's freedom. More stuff is freedom, right?
Right.
But that's not freedom.
No.
The left has done a very good job of perverting what it means to actually be free. And what's interesting about, this is what the historical precedent that I want to talk about. The difference between the American War for Independence and the French Revolution. A lot of people, we refer to the American War for Independence as the American Revolution. It really wasn't a revolution. We were fighting to keep our freedom, something that we had had for years until the British started sending special regulations just to the colonies and started enforcing martial law. It was a war for independence. It wasn't a revolution. What we saw happen in France was a real revolution, and this was tyranny from the bottom up. So we saw in France a revolution by which the lower classes of people revolted against the higher classes of people. But part of doing that, they wanted to completely. This was coming not from the government. This wasn't coming from the top down. This was coming from the bottom up, which is terrifying. It's terrifying no matter which way it comes from, but this is especially terrifying because in this mob mentality, they got away with so many atrocities, straight up bloodthirsty murder, right?
Yeah.
But what they wanted to do is they wanted to completely root out the idea of God from every facet of life. And what we saw happen in France during the French Revolution, their moral foundation completely eroded and decayed. They completely lost any sense of values. It was a fast forward warp speed movement into secularism or secular humanism. There was a lack of accountability and a complete loss of community also. When I say that there was a, by pushing God out, here's one of the things that they did. I don't know if you know this. I don't know how many people actually know this, but we got the metric system. You know, we got so many different things, so many different, not the entire metric system, but we got so many different things from the French Revolution. This is the one that I wanted to talk about. So forgive me if I misspeak a little bit. I don't have all my notes in front of me, just a few. One of the things that they tried to do is they tried to get rid of the 7-day work week, because the 7-day week is found in the book of Genesis, and they related the 7-day week to God and Christianity. So just like everything else, getting rid of the way we measure different things, they want to do everything in increments of 10. So they had a regular 12-month calendar, but it was broken down by 3 weeks of 10 days each. But it didn't last. And the reason it didn't last is because we are not designed for a 10-day work week. Like, you, we need rest far more often than once every 9 days, right?
Right.
So this was one of the things that they tried to do that completely threw all their labor, what labor they had, what means of production that they had, what they were still trying to work with, completely threw it all out of orbit, off kilter, and it just didn't work. So when you talk about people that are trying to eliminate God from life altogether. They will take it as far as they possibly can. One of the things that it does is it makes you want to get rid of all your educators, because your educators teach people to think. And the God of the Bible is the God of reason and logic. And throughout the Bible, teaches people to study and be wise and be smart. It's the whole book of Proverbs.
Now, see, the left won't tell you that, though. The left won't say that. The left says, no, you're those Bible-thumping, gun-toting imbeciles. We're the ones who have a higher authority because we are the enlightened ones.
And that's right. And so what is the danger behind Christianity in terms of education? But we've seen it in the French Revolution. We've seen it in the Stalin era Soviet Russia. We've seen it. Hitler did the same thing. We've seen Mao Zedong do it. We saw Castro do it in Cuba. All these communist, left-wing, progressive governments all had to do. They all had the same playbook. They wanted to get rid of God.
Right.
And then once they got rid of God, once they eliminated a higher authority, now there's no God-given rights to protect.
God and guns.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Guns are quick to go.
The guns were the first thing to go. And if you look at all these different societies you're talking about in different eras, the way that they did, the people defended themselves, they got rid of that first. Then they said, okay, now that you are not able to defend yourself, here's what's next. And then that's when the religion, the getting rid of religion came in.
So I think getting back to your original question, the idea of, you know, this all comes from a certain place. I believe that the underlying current under all of this, and people have written books about it and studied it, is there is a seems to be like a spiritual warfare. That's why you've said it and I've said it before. Some of the things that the left wants to do seems outright demonic, such as castrating small children,
right,
in order to push their particular
it
agenda
is.
You
it
know
is.
And I don't know how we can explain it any other way than the idea that if the more you push God or an accountability to a higher power outside of our public discourse, well, then the more room there is for this evil to come in.
Right.
And that's exactly what I think is happening. That's what I think history shows us time and time again, going back 2,000 years to the Roman era, all the way up through the Dark Ages, the Renaissance. I should say the medieval ages. When I was in school, they didn't like me saying Dark Ages. The medieval ages, all the way up to the Renaissance period, all the way up to the Age of Enlightenment, and then here we are today. But we have been blessed by so much of our freedom in America because we've held some particular principles in common, one of them being the idea that we're all created equal.
Right. And that's the bottom line, is we're created equal. Again, the conservative right, the true conservatives, want unity of all people. It has no color. It is all people. The left thrive with division.
That's right. How much time do we got left on this segment here, Ken?
We got a few minutes.
Let's play another clip, because this is we just talked about everything that we've kind of come from, morally speaking, philosophically speaking, as a country, and some of the threats to our rights and why it is we're in the place that we're in today. Let's go to clip number 6. This is Mayor-elect Brandon Johnson of Chicago. Recently, did you see this video of this woman getting attacked by the mob?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely terrifying. This is a nightmare. Folks, if you go to paulcurtman.com, PaulCurtman, go to radio number 98. You can watch this video, but I will warn you, it is incredibly disturbing. It is a mob that surrounds a woman who's trying to get into her apartment building, and she's grabbed by the throat, and she blood-curdling scream as she's pulled down into the mob and viciously, viciously beat. And the mayor-elect of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, has words to say about that.
The real answer is, how do we make sure? The question is, how do we make sure that people can eat? Look, no one is going to condone, behavior that quite frankly speaks to a level of desperation.
So you're not condoning looting.
I'm saying that people are acting out of desperation. We don't want a society that is acting out of desperation, but you have to pay attention to the cries that people have.
So you're not condoning looting.
You won't answer.
There's no way to embrace that. What I'm saying is, you can't condone the looting that corporations continue to do every single day when they take tax dollars from black, brown, white folks all over the city of Chicago so that they can turn a profit.
Okay, let's talk about that, Mayor-elect Brandon Johnson. Let's start in reverse. Let's talk about what he just said.
Yeah.
You can't embrace that when at the same time you got corporations that are taxing people? Well, who writes the tax laws?
Yeah.
Who write? It's not the corporations writing the tax laws.
No.
It's people like in the city of Chicago. They have their own tax laws in the city of Chicago. Do something about it, mayor-elect. You're the incoming mayor. You have a problem with corporations taxing people. They're not doing it because they write the tax law. You write the tax law.
Yeah, you're not going to see a corporate CEO say, well, you know, I know we can get away with a lot of savings here by using the tax laws, but let's not do that because that's not the right thing to do. They're never going to do it.
And what about this? He says, this is a cry for desperation. Explain to me, Mayor-elect Brandon Johnson, how is the right answer to anybody's desperation to grab a woman by the neck, a young single woman, and pull her down into a crowd and viciously beat her? How does that? People are just wandering around like, oh, we just got to beat a young white woman. We got to go beat a woman. We're just so desperate to beat somebody. Is that the desperation?
And where is that located again? So people can see that video because they need to see
it. Yeah, go to paulkirtman.com. It's radio number 98. Go all the way to the bottom and you'll be able to see it. And then the other thing is this. He equates this. The question we need to be asking is, how can people eat? These people are not marauding through the streets of Chicago because they're hungry. If they were, they would have been robbing and stealing food. But that's not what happened. They were out to wreak havoc and mayhem and burn and pillage. I think two people got killed.
Yeah, stomp on cars, shoot people just by point blank range because they wanted to.
See, he's trying to normalize this behavior, and this behavior does become normal when you have rulers that have completely pushed out the idea of being held accountable to a higher authority. He doesn't think he's held accountable to a higher authority, and if he does not regard God, he will not regard man. You know what? The Bible even says that. Anyway, man, I was just starting to get fired up.
I know.
Maybe we didn't have another 7 or 8 hours, you know? Hey, we will be back next week right here on The Paul Kirtman Show. Ken, thanks for being with me today. We'll be back next week. 101.9, 94.1, News Talk STL.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kirtman. This is The Paul Kirtman Show on News Talk STL. A smoke plug. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.